May it please the Court. Although many cases state that the evidence should be viewed in a light most favorable to the government after a verdict, where the jury's verdict shows that the jury did not believe some of the witnesses, the evidence rejected by the jury should be rejected by this Court.
Why?
Because it's many cases state over and over that it is the jurors who determine the credibility of the witnesses, and this Court will not revisit the determination
of that. For sentencing purposes, is that true?
For sentencing purposes, that is not true, but the sentencing judge, in making the decisions that she did, rejected a lot of the same evidence that the jurors rejected regarding the amounts in the statements that she made during sentencing.
Wasn't that permissible for sentencing purposes?
The judge could have made different determinations or could have relied on some of that testimony if she had made a different, if she had evaluated differently. But the judge, even at sentencing, did not rely on Sipes' testimony at his own guilty plea. She said she wasn't going to resolve that, didn't rely on it, and implicitly rejected Aaron Unger's testimony regarding amounts, as well as the statement allegedly made by Dean to Deputy Jones that he owed an $80,000 debt, by finding that Jeffrey Dean was only selling to support his habit. So in making that finding, she did implicitly reject the same testimony that the jury rejected. And the jury clearly rejected that testimony. In fact, the jury rejected the agent's explanation of the index card that Jeffrey Dean owed $29,850 because the agent's explanation was that that represented 1.5 to 2 pounds of methamphetamine, and 1.5 pounds is 687 grams, which is well over the 500 grams. So the jury rejected that testimony as well. Now, one of the things that the government continues to argue as evidence of Jeffrey Dean's participation in the conspiracy is the statement that he made to Deputy Jones. And Deputy Jones, when he was testifying about the statement, admitted or acknowledged that Mr. Dean had given no time frame for when this transaction or the drug debt may have occurred, but that the transaction occurred on Bethlehem Road, in his residence on Bethlehem Road, and the evidence was that Mr. Dean only lived at this residence until November of 2003. So the only thing we're left with is, even if that statement was true, and that's not attacking Deputy Jones' credibility, but Mr. Dean's state of mind being on meth for so many years. But even if that statement was true, as Deputy Jones understood it, the fact that he purchased a pound of methamphetamine sometime before November 2003 from a Hispanic male is not evidence of his participation in this conspiracy, because there was no evidence, absolutely none, tying that transaction to this conspiracy.
But the court, I mean, just to back up, the court looks at all of the evidence. If what we're talking about is the sentence as opposed to the sufficiency of the evidence to support the jury's verdict, and decides to give Mr. Dean the benefit of the doubt, leave the offense level at 38, so, you know, taking that 500 or less than 500, whatever it is, and then looking at ameliorative facts. And the court, in fact, does that. The sentence winds up at 156 as opposed to 240.
But, Your Honor, the judge was obligated to begin with an amount that was foreseeable to Dean.
But and doesn't she do that? I mean, you know, there's a lot of evidence when you look at the case as a whole that suggests that maybe this was a break for Mr. Dean.
Well, only if she had made the finding and there were any facts showing that what she was relying on to say that this amount was foreseeable to him. Because 38 corresponds to 15 kilos of meth. Mm-hmm. And there's no evidence that he knew, that Dean knew anyone other than Unger in this conspiracy. There is no evidence that 15 kilos of meth was foreseeable to Dean.
So your point is she never calculated the appropriate guideline.
That's correct. She never made the starting point. She never made the calculation for the starting point.
So it's a casual sentencing process, and if she got to the right answer, it was by accident.
That's correct, and we don't know what the right answer is because she said that she attributed, I believe, level 30 to the jury's verdict when the jury's verdict was under 500 grams, which could have been anywhere from level 12 to level 30. So she didn't even make the finding of, okay, here's what the jury was looking at, and it must have been level 30. Well, she just said, that's it.
She sentenced him in accordance with the jury verdict.
No, Your Honor, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that she had to rely on evidence where there is a sufficient indicia of reliability to support its accuracy. And she herself rejected a lot of evidence that was present. But she did not say, okay, I'm rejecting that, but here's what I'm relying on, and here's the amount that was foreseeable to Dean, and this is why. She made no such finding.
Well, I'm looking at the sentencing transcript. She starts with the jury verdict, and she undoubtedly, you know, also, this isn't a complete copy, but the pre-sentence report has put this together. There are various objections, and then over on page 38 of the transcript, she says, because it's a conspiracy charge, is to allow the offense level to stand at 38, taking into account that the standard for the court's determination by a preponderance of the evidence is less than reasonable doubt, but she says, I'm just going to stay with the 500 or less with the jury and then take into account as an amelioration. So she's relying on the pre-sentence report is what it looks like to me.
Right, but the pre-sentence report was citing unnamed law enforcement sources, which they can do, but if it's challenged, then there has to be some showing of what these sources were or something to indicate the reliability, and there was no discussion of what she was relying on and what number she was starting with. She started with level 38 because that's what the conspiracy distributed. What she should have started with
was... Well, that's what his conviction for the participation in the conspiracy started with. That's
no, Your Honor. His would have been level 30. So she didn't start out with his level of...
Well, no. Maybe we're talking cross purposes. He is convicted under a charge of conspiring to possess with intent to distribute and distribution methamphetamine. The jury checks the less than 500 box, right?
And that would correspond to between level 12 and level 30. She starts with level 8 because, she says, that's a reliable estimate of the amount of methamphetamine being dealt by the members of the conspiracy. She does not make a foreseeability finding of how much of that methamphetamine was actually foreseeable to Mr. Dean. In fact, she says she doesn't think that it's all foreseeable. And then later on she says, well, it was level 30, so we'll split the difference and I'll give him 4 points off.
Say it's level 30. She says it's level 38.
She starts with level 38, but she does talk about, she does mention level 30, and that's when she says, I'm going to split the difference and give him 4 levels off. There is no correlation to any evidence, any findings that she makes, none whatsoever.
Well, she could have gone with 38, couldn't she? I mean,
not unless she made a finding of foreseeability, and she didn't do that.
Well, did she find that the drugs that were involved in the conspiracy were not foreseeable to him?
She didn't make any finding. She just didn't make a finding of how much was foreseeable to him. There was no indication that he knew anyone else beyond Mr. Unger. There is no evidence introduced, no evidence cited in the pre-sentence report, nothing that she could have based that on. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Brookman.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Matt Brookman. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of Indiana. I was trial counsel on this case for the government, and I'm asking today that you affirm both the guilty verdict as well as the sentence that was imposed by the trial court.
So the real question for you, Mr. Brookman, is this just too seat of the pants in terms of trying to start out with a properly calculated guideline level once she gets over on page 68 and 69 of the sentencing transcript and says, well, we start out with the full amount of the conspiracy is 38, but the less than 500 is a 30, split the difference, on and on. That's really not a finding. It's just an equitable approach.
No, at that stage of the sentencing hearing, that page 68, 69 area, the trial court, the district court judge, had already made her sentencing guidelines findings, and what she was doing at that point was addressing the 3553 factors and trying to come with it.
The sentencing guideline finding puts him at a 38, responsible for the whole conspiracy?
I think the sentencing guideline put him at a 38 plus two levels for his obstruction of justice for testifying falsely, so he would have been a 40.
Now, where's the reasonable foreseeability finding?
The judge adopted the pre-sentence report and did so after listening to the arguments of counsel, considering the government's sentencing memorandum that was filed, and I've attached a copy of that with my brief. But there was abundant evidence to find that the defendant, that the amounts of the conspiracy were reasonably foreseeable to Mr. Dean. As the court may recall, the defendant was involved at a high level, getting anywhere from 8 ounces to a pound or multi-pounds at a time during the course of the conspiracy, and that evidence came out during trial. And was also included in the pre-sentence report. The defendant was allowed to be fronted upwards of $80,000 of methamphetamine from the organization, something that he admitted to Deputy Jones during his November 2006 statements that he made to him. And the defendant will be held responsible not only for amounts that he personally distributed, but also any amounts that were reasonably foreseeable to him.
Does the record show how often he had a pound?
Mr. Unger, his co-conspirator and the person who delivered the methamphetamine to Mr. Dean on behalf of the other co-conspirator, Ribalor, and the rest of the organization, he indicated that he would bring Mr. Dean 8 to 12 ounces weekly for a period throughout basically the summer of 2006 through November of 2006.
What evidence is there of actual sale? In other words, where the defendant actually sold? He sold to Sipe, we know that. Who else did he sell to? Do we have hard evidence of a sale?
The evidence came in at trial and also during Sipe's sentencing hearing that he sold to Sipe. The defendant admitted in his statement with Deputy Jones that he was reselling the methamphetamine, that he had gotten, in answer to your question, that he had gotten a pound from the 10-pound package that had been brought to his house, his New Bethlehem Road house. And then the evidence also that he was receiving 8 to 12 ounces at a time on a weekly basis, that this was in no way consistent with an amount that somebody could use personally, and that he would therefore, the reasonable inference being that he would have to be distributing that amount.
Is that the basis for the prosecutor's statement that the defendant had a whole network of purchasers?
Yes, sir. Because Mr. Sipe wasn't getting methamphetamine from Mr. Dean back in 2003 or 2004 or 2005. But Mr. Dean had been receiving methamphetamine from the organization for that long. There were obviously other people that he had to be giving it to because Mr. Sipe wasn't receiving everything that Mr. Dean got. In other words, Dean wouldn't get it from Ribalor and then immediately turn over the full amount to Sipe. He would give some to Sipe. He would obviously distribute the rest to other persons and probably use some small amounts himself. So in the end, I think there was abundant evidence that Mr. Dean, the defendant Dean, was committed to the organization, that he played a significant role in the organization, and from that, that the drug amounts of the organization were reasonably foreseeable to him. I don't believe there was any dispute that this group was distributing large amounts of meth and also other drugs in southeastern Indiana. In conspiracy wide, they were up in the 150 kilo range. However, it only takes 15 kilos to be a level 38. And what Judge Barker said at the sentencing hearing, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it in front of me, but she said, I'm going to find you're a level 38 based on the evidence. However, she said that I'm going to find also that the conspiracy wide, there was 150 kilos at least moved by this organization during the time frame of the conspiracy. However, when it comes time for me to craft a sentence, a specific sentence under 3553, I'm going to take into account the fact that you probably didn't know the full weight of the conspiracy. In other words, 150 kilos, and I'm going to use that you probably didn't know about 150 kilos, and I'm going to use that as one of my factors when I decide what your actual sentence would be.
The evidence of trial showed that he had how much delivered to him?
He had something like, 8 to 12 ounces from the summer of 2006 through the November of 2006, plus an additional pound that he had received sometime prior to that from the organization during his statement to...
How did she get, 15 kilos? Isn't that what you said she...
Yes, sir.
How did she get 15, that he was reasonable, foreseeable, that he had about 15 kilos?
Well, again, the law is not that he had to personally touch 15 kilos for him to be held responsible for that. Yeah. It's merely that it was reasonably foreseeable to him. And I think what the court was saying was that 150 kilos may not have been reasonably foreseeable to you, but 15 kilos certainly was, and some number in between there may have been. And I'm going to lower your sentence because I'm going to take into account the fact that I don't think you were you should be on the hook for a full 150 kilos, if that makes sense.
Or even a full 15. She gets the 38 from the 15?
Well, I think she did believe that a 38 was the sentencing guidelines that should be used. So I think the 15, when she finds a 38, which is at least 15, but I don't think she, I think she gave him the benefit of the doubt that he probably didn't know about 150 kilos. And ultimately, the irony of this whole case...
Here's the problem. I mean, you are drawing inferences from a kind of thin explanation that she's given. And you may be entirely right. But on the other hand, she hasn't spelled out how much she thinks was reasonably foreseeable to him. And to say, well, if she thinks 150 isn't, she must have thought 15 was, is guessing, isn't it? Maybe it was 10. I mean, that would make a difference to him.
Well, the court found a level 38, so she at least believed that 15 kilos was reasonably foreseeable to him. And that was also consistent with...
She doesn't have to say, I am finding a 38 because I think that 15 is reasonably foreseeable.
I think she found a level 38 because she thought 15 was reasonably foreseeable, and in doing that, she adopted the pre-sentence report and the arguments that were made to her at sentencing. And those things suggested that at least 15 kilos and upwards of 150 kilos might be foreseeable to him. So I think there was more than enough evidence to peg him at a level 38. And what I started to say earlier is that the irony of all this is that in the end, Judge Barker gave him a non-guideline sentence of level almost 7 years less than what his guideline sentence would have called for. So in the end, Mr. Dean's appealing a sentence where he really got an enormous break, in my opinion, in his actual sentence. However, the court did that based on considering a number of 3553 factors and which it was entitled to do. With respect to the sufficiency of the evidence argument, there was, of course, abundant evidence that the jury could rely on and that a rational jury could find beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant was guilty of this crime. As the court pointed out in its questions to appellant's counsel, the essential elements here are that the defendant that a conspiracy existed and that the defendant became a member of that conspiracy. And what we have, obviously, in this case is standardized practices over a long period of time, receiving substantial amounts of methamphetamine, carrying large fronts, mutual trust. So I believe that there was abundant evidence of the sufficient evidence to sustain the conviction. I see I'm out of time, and I thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Blises?
Your Honor, in the sentencing transcript, the judge starts out with level 38, stating that this is a reliable estimate of what the entire conspiracy distributed. And then she says she did not think it was foreseeable to Mr. Dean, so she made an incorrect calculation. She was not referring to 150 kilos. She also rejected Mr. Sipes' testimony. She said she's not going to resolve it, so she did not rely on it. And as far as his, as far as the factors, there is no large quantity of drugs that anyone really discussed, certainly not that the jury found. There's no standardized dealings with other members. There's dealing with one member and only for several months. And Mr. Dean testified that he received methamphetamine from other sources.
But what about the PSR? I mean, the government reviews what some of the things in the PSR were in its sentencing memorandum. And it finds that an excess of 15 kilos, it uses the exact terminology, were reasonably foreseeable and attributable to the defendant. Then it goes through these various people, Ortuno Vasquez, that what he said to Brad Jones, Unger. It does mention Sipe.
But they make no connection between these other co-conspirators or the other people who were indicted in as part of the conspiracy. There's no connection. There's no evidence of Dean's knowledge that these people even existed, who they were, how much they moved.
Aaron Unger, who delivered methamphetamine to Dean on behalf of the organization. Sipe, who received methamphetamine from Dean. I mean, I think no evidence. Ortuno Vasquez was a drug source for Dean.
There's no evidence that he was. There was no evidence that, or that statement is not supported by any evidence. There's a lot of statements that are made that were challenged because there was no supporting evidence, and there was none offered at the sentencing hearing. And there's no evidence, again, counsel argues about the 10-pound package and the 1-pound methamphetamine deal. There's no evidence that ties it into this conspiracy, so that cannot be used.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not? The court thanks you very much for your assistance to the court and for your client. And thank you as well, Mr. Brookman. We will take the case under advisement.